Hello and welcome to. Wait, we should do like three of these. All right, what episode am I on now?
I have no clue.
Episode
92. I didn't know that we were doing this.
91. All right, we have to do like at least 8 of these.
Oh my God! It's 12:30 on a Wednesday. That means it's time to record.
No, we usually
8 intros for Ninja Consultant.
We usually wait until 11:30 on a Sunday. That's our.
Oh, so
once
we're early.
Once every 6 months.
We're ahead of schedule.
Right. I should explain what I've been doing and why.
Foolishly.
I had some extra time after Otakon where my class wrapped up and I'm no longer planning a wedding reception party and school hasn't started yet in the semester. And so it's not very busy at work. And I realized Anime World Order was getting really, really close to episode 100. Back in the day, because we've been podcasting for 5 years now. This is year six.
Yeah.
Our sixth anniversary just passed, and Anime World Order is coming up in their sixth year anniversary because they started 6 months after we did. We began in July of 2005. They began in December. So we predate them.
Ah, suckers.
We predate Dave and Joel's Fast Karate for the Gentleman by a couple months as well. I think.
Yeah, you can't take that away from us. Sure, you're consistent and higher quality, but we were first.
But in the last couple of years, Anime World Order hasn't been that consistent, and part of it's because they do so many panels at cons, and also they write a lot. Well, some of them write a lot for Otaku USA Magazine, which also is my reason why podcasting became less. I became less able to podcast so much when I started writing so many reviews in Thanks, because in part. Thanks to Daryl getting us all hired on that magazine, killing podcast after podcast.
It's called pod fading.
I know, right? But our wedding also really interfered with like putting out a lot of episodes in 2009 and then planning a wedding anniversary party, also killing a lot of episodes
so that was,
for 2011.
That was some years there.
I know, right? But there was a time when Anime World Order, like, they were very infrequently putting out episodes, like once every other month or so, and I felt that as long as I put out an episode around the same time as they did, I wasn't being a huge podcast slacker. Because despite all the things going on in my life, I've been really hesitant to quit the podcast. It's really hard to quit things.
For you.
And the more projects I take on, a lot of them are because of the podcast. Oh, and also, like, I've gotten way fewer manga reviews this year.
That's true.
Publisher Weekly has gone through a lot of a shuffle of ownership, and they haven't been sending stuff much. We're talking, you say, down to a reasonable amount, but then shelf life has been really intense. But I finally managed to. I've started to work shelf life into my life where I'm managing the time a bit better, and I know more what goes into it and what I'm capable of, and I'm getting a bit faster at writing it. So that's how we're able to put out any episodes at all this year.
Ever again.
Yeah. But yes. Anime World Order does have more than 100 episodes, but the thing is, they number theirs by having anything that doesn't count in their normal format is like a bonus episode. I think in the beginning, we had a couple of Ninja Consultant bonus tracks that you can still download where Noah was like, I don't want to put this rant in the normal episode and whatever. And
right, but then
we kind of gave up on that.
Rants weren't very good.
Right, and then we just didn't record as many shows, so. Because we've never really settled on a normal format, although I think our listeners. And perhaps Daryl has tried to have labeled the normal format for us that, in fact, a normal episode of Ninja Consultant is one where both Aaron and Noah talk.
Seems reasonable.
You'd think so. Noah doesn't talk much when I give panels. He's there for
Well, I'm not allowed
support.
To talk much when you give panels.
It's true. I have 400 slides, and we have to get through all of them in 45
not
minutes.
Not an exaggeration.
There were
really are 400 slides in that PowerPoint presentation for Unusual Manga Genre.
And we saw them all.
Yes, we did.
Well, there were only like 250 or 300, but then I got denied. I didn't get to do a culinary manga panel at Otakon, so I really felt like just in case something happens, in my life, and I can't go to Otakon next year, and I can't give the panel again, I had to get all of the content in. I realized I forgot some stuff, like that lacrosse manga I got in Japan last time.
It would hardly matter because it came down to like 17 seconds at the end of the panel.
Yeah.
Before we had to leave.
Yeah, and we didn't take cash. Anyway, but so we didn't do the culinary manga panel at Otakon, but we did do the culinary manga panel at New York Comic Con, and some other podcaster recorded it on their phone and I will be including that as an episode perhaps directly after this.
That's not what we're introducing? What are we introducing?
That is what we're introducing.
Oh, that is what we're introducing.
This time, welcome to episode 92 of the Ninja Consultant podcast, a recast of a culinary manga panel that another podcast, my culinary manga panel that another podcaster recorded. Hopefully the audio is a bit better, but they were recording it on their iPhone. I ran it through a levelator and stuff. Probably not great. I might be able to get a better recording of the culinary manga panel at Anime Week in Atlanta. Maybe. Whatever. I don't know. If
this was originally what?
New
York Comic Con. Okay.
And also the PDF I'm providing, I think it's from Manga Next. And those two cons were kind of back to back. So I think the order of the slides might be off in the PDF. Which, if you've been listening to these and not looking at our website is ninjaconsultant.com. We're still on LiveJournal, but I'm thinking about migrating to work, like, away from that and just using WordPress so there are more episodes in the feed and stuff. And also, LiveJournal's being all
this Russian spam that I can't read.
LiveJournal's really gone downhill in the last year. And all the people that I, like, why I was on LiveJournal, they have left. They've jumped ship. Going to some place called DreamWidth. Anyway, keep recording. So, that's coming up sometime in the future, but I figure we'll get 100 episodes out of the way before I, like, migrate the site, and maybe, I don't know.
Right, which is probably, like, 79 real episodes, and then, like, 21 fake episodes.
They're all fake, because we're cyborgs. I was saying on Twitter.
We're not ninja cyborg wizards.
I'm not a real person. We saw a video game called Fat Wizard, so I was joking on Twitter that we should change the name of the podcast to Fat Wizard. Maybe the Fat Wizard cast? The Fat Wizard Beard cast? What do you think?
No, I think, didn't Zach Birchie already call the Beard cast?
Yeah, because someone on the ANN, at the ANN panel at Otakon, like someone asking a question, had like a huge beard.
It was glorious.
And Dave Riley was tweeting about it, and it was pretty funny. Yeah. But yes, the Fat Wizard podcast, where we are cyborg wizard ninjas who don't know that we're cyborgs sent to assassinate other cyborgs.
In a Mortal Kombat.
Right. Yeah, so if you're listening to this, Anime Week in Atlanta is coming up, and I will give a slightly different spin on the culinary manga panel than the one that you're about to hear, with more manga about coffee in it, because I found the manga that I bought in Japan that I didn't include at Otakon. So you should go to our panel. I'll put the details on the website, because they schedule this, like, freaking right away. Like in June or something. I'm also doing a new panel called 21 and Up, Anime and Manga. It is anime and manga about drinking, and that is a request made by request. Our friend Keith at Teleport City was like, you guys should do some kind of presentation on whiskey in anime and manga, because I know a lot about Japanese whiskey and about whiskey in general, and he does. And I was like, yeah, that sounds like a thing that could happen. It's a lot easier to just do, like, alcohol, manga, and anime. There aren't so many American comics about drinking. They're like...
What? You don't know.
I can't think of any.
You don't know American comics.
Well, I don't mean about alcoholics. I mean, like, here's how to drink wine.
You don't know. There could be. There could
be
like...
web comics.
What about Bacchus?
As what about Bacchus? Is he a Marvel hero as well? That would be amusing.
Like, three listeners will get the joke, but don't worry about it.
All right. My name is Erin Finnegan, and I write for AnimeNewsNetwork.com. I write the Shelf Life column that comes out every Monday. It's a review of all the recent anime that's come out on DVD. And I also write for Shop USA magazine. I review anime for them. I used to write for New Manga for Publishers Weekly, and I used to write for a manga reviews for a website that doesn't exist anymore called PopCultureShock.com. Sam Cusack also wrote for that site. Do you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah. Hi, my name is Sam Cusack. I currently have a review blog called The Life in Panels, and I also do some manga and animated artwork, related artwork on a blog I have called Damage and MP. I met Erin working for Pop Culture Shock's Manga Recon, wrote and reviewed for 2 years, and I guess we haven't really explained the
concept. No, we haven't gotten the concept.
All right, we'll wait for the fun part.
And this is my husband, Noah.
Hi.
He helps me with my podcast, the Ninja Consultant Podcast, which you should by all means check out at ninjaconsultant.com.
Our podcast.
Our podcast. I edit. I know. It's also Noah's the co-host. He's a very valuable member of the Ninja Consultant team. Possibly any other member. the only other member. Last year we got married in Zero Gravity, and if you're interested in that, go to zerogravitywedding.com or look for Zero Gravity Wedding on YouTube and
or
you can
watch
see
TV.
It. Or yeah, sort of romantic. This panel is culinary manga, and it is about the wide variety of manga about food, about cooking, about baking, about eating. And there are a lot of them that are out in English now, and I'm really excited, because I gave this panel a couple years ago at a different con. I was like, oh, and it's too bad you can't read this, because this is not translated yet. Now it is. I don't know why Viz looked deep into my brain and decided that Oishinko is the best thing they could publish. And I don't know, probably me and some food critics who work for newspapers probably bought it. We'll get to that in a minute. Sam has some experience working with food that I don't.
When I was 12, I started working at a restaurant as a busser, and we got more and more popular to the point where I had to learn how to cook. So for, I'd say 6 years, but it's really like four, I was a chef in a small restaurant, so sandwiches, breakfast foods, salads, catering, all that business. And I just got asked to start at a local bakery in Boston, Massachusetts, where I live. If any of you are from there, it's Flower Bakery.
So this panel is kind of a combination of two previous panels that I've done. There's a panel called Unusual Manga Genres that I did last night, and I had a section on just food manga that was part of that panel, but it was getting too long, so I split it off into its own thing. And this year at Anime Boston, we tried to make some recipes that we got in manga to see what would happen, and so we're going to share kind of the photographic results. I make these things. I'm not an expert cook. I'm still kind of a beginner or like an intermediate kind of person. And Noah doesn't cook at all, but he did taste many of the experimental dishes.
And I'm an expert taster.
Right. Not at all. Okay. So here are some of the... What? I'm not... So here are some... these are some of the manga that we're going to be talking about, especially in the cooking portion of the panel. Oishinbo, which is a very long manga, it's like 100-some volumes in Japan. Viz pulled different stories by theme and put out like 7 volumes of compilation, and I think I'm going to go over a bunch of them later. Ironwalk John is kind of running out of print, but you can always find used copies in dealer's rooms like this one. I recommend it can sort of be read out of order, so you can just pick up any volume and get into the utter wackiness. It was published by DR Master, and I think they've gone out of business, maybe, but you can find it on their website. You can usually get $5 or $6 a volume for that one. Yakitate Japan is ongoing and still coming out. It's about competitive bread baking. We'll get to that in a minute more. Addicted to Curry is not available at translate yet, but maybe it should be. And Kitchen Princess is complete. It's from Del Rey Manga. Who are now, something funny is happening with Del Rey, but anyway, it's a great series, and you should really, it's only like 10 or 11 volumes long, or 13, I should have put this down. Okay. Competitive baking manga. Yakitate Japan. Azuma Kazuma wants to be the greatest chef, like, not chef, he wants to be the greatest bread baker in the world. He has this power that his hands are unusually warm. At first they call it solar hands, and it causes bread dough to rise at a rate, so it gives him a competitive edge. And it's a kind of regular Shonen Jump type story about being the best baker in Japan. So here's some humorous Izagag panel, and there's the gag manga. So I love this panel on the right. Like, when I get bigger, I'll become a master baker, and I will crush you with my skills. That's the sort of thing we're talking about with Yakitate Japan. This is his boss, the shirtless Afro guy on the other side. So in Yakitate Japan, when people taste things, they have really funny reactions.
They turn into things.
They do a crab dance. Crazy things happen.
They don't get to that.
This is one of the judges after tasting one of the breads. Peacock plumes just shoot out of his mask. It's crazy. This guy dies after he's one of the judges. He's eating a bread so incredibly delicious that he dies for like 10 minutes. I die. Sometimes the competitor is really weird, like this guy who wears a koala mask. And what I really love is some of the really like ridiculous setups of the series. Like the next competition venue, like have they already played out, you know, Kitchen Stadium? The next competition venue is Mexico. I will destroy the Japanese representatives in a 4,900-foot deep pit Guatemala cave. Actually, it's the French team trying to kill the Japanese team, and they just drop them in a really deep cave in Mexico. But the judge who's sent with them decides that they will still continue on with the competition, and they're going to make bread out of the blind cave fish. Here's how the description of how, you know, fish cake is kind of made out of different kinds of sea creatures and whatever, so they do make their fish bread. Anyway, so we tried to make some bread from Yakitate, Japan. In an early episode in the show, they give these little live-action segments at the end where they talk about, like, how here, you too can make rice maker bread at home. Rice maker bread turns out to be incredibly difficult. Our friend from the Reverse Thieves podcast tried to make this first to several horrifying attempts. So getting the ingredients right is really important with bread. I mean, I think Sam can talk about this too, but there's another really important component, and I'm going to fly through a lot of these because we have a lot of slides. It's that a lot of rice makers like are not really meant to be continually on. They sort of turn off automatically once the rice has absorbed the water and like the weight causes the spring to sort of go up. So you have to force the rice maker to stay on, which sort of voids your warranty and might catch your rice maker on fire. Anyway, like the reverse these guys managed to burn one side really good, the middle was still raw. And then he kind of like baked the rest of it in a, like a press in the George Foreman grill. The result was not very edible. So I tried it, and I read another webpage about like the WikiHow thing about how to make rice cooker bread, and it gives the same warning that I was talking about. But I have a really cute Hello Kitty rice maker that like that was really hard to find and kind of expensive on here, so I didn't really want to catch it on fire, so I was really worried about making this. So I followed the recipe from the show, got the Easter rice, and it was sort of working for a while. But in the end, it's kind of raw in the middle, and I didn't want to like die of whatever food poisoning, so I tried to cook the results on a cookie sheet, and then I burn it, and it was really today's mission. So we talked to the editor of Yakitate Japan from Viz Media about like the had their staff trying to make recipes from the books, and they had to make specific ones through the book. I had to make specific recipes from the books mostly because they're kind of complex and esoteric, and I'm not really a great cook. But I have found that I crave certain foods based on the volume of Yakitate I'm editing. I certainly tried making the Chinese buns, steamed pork buns, when I was editing volume 19. I didn't use the Roman method described in the book because I didn't have the decades-old piece of starter dough match, but they still turned out pretty tasty. Okay, from Addicted to Curry, we tried to make the pumpkin curry. Sam tried to make it. And they kind of give a recipe at the end of each volume. Do you want to talk to me?
Yeah, they give a recipe at the end of each chapter based on what they actually made. And this seemed really interesting just because pumpkin is a very complex flavor and I like curry. But spoiler alert, it was disgusting. I think it's mainly because we discovered that pumpkins in Japan are actually a specific type of like...
kombucha?
Yeah, and I went out and...
It was like an acorn squash.
Yeah, they wanted a squash, and I thought they meant an actual pumpkin, and it was January or February when I was doing this, so I couldn't get them. So I got, like, pureed pumpkin in a can, which has all these weird preservatives and gross stuff like that. And so I cut everything off. This was, like, a two-hour endeavor, by the way. You're supposed to cut a bunch of stuff up and then cook it and puree it in your blender. And then you have to strain that, and I got to skip some steps because you have to cut up the pumpkin. And then they wanted, like, dried chilies and all these vegetables, and then you're supposed to cook the curry and the sauce separately and eat them together, and it was just, it was awful. It was not good. None of the flavors melded together, and it's just based on ingredients that they have over there that I couldn't find over here.
Which is a serious problem. We're lucky enough to live in, Noah and I live in New York City, so we live near a bunch of Japanese specialty stores. So it's fairly easy, although somewhat expensive, to find, like, esoteric ingredients. A lot of times, like, translated cookbooks will have, different kinds of, like, substitutions you can make. If you want to get more addicted to curry recipes, not without necessarily reading the translations, then you can, on the manga cast, they used to make a curry a week kind of thing. So if you look for, search for the manga cast online, and if you look for his tag, Manga Curry no Maki, you can find his own, like, sort of audio curry recipes. So now we're going to talk about Kitchen Princess. Kitchen Princess is the super amazing, ridiculous shoujo manga about kind of the same thing. This girl was an orphan. Her parents were master pastry chefs. They died in some car accident when she was young. Now she's attending this elite academy where everyone has a specialty, and her specialty it comes up here. She was also trying to meet the pudding prince, this guy who gave her a pudding spoon in Hokkaido when she was young. So she has the perfect 10th sense of smell and taste, so she can exactly, without even tasting anything, like, she can tell from the smell of this tea exactly, like, where it's from. I should have done this differently in my experience too small to see what it came. This taste, okay, but what it's really about, and what I really love when this happens in manga or whatever, like, is basically this, crying while eating.
Emotional eating.
There's also really good, there's a website, cryingwhileeating.com. But just any food that's so great that it just makes you burst into tears, slow, you know, tears while eating it is really great. Okay, so in the end of Kitchen Princess, there's a lot of really great translated recipes with maybe, you know, certain levels of detail. But I did learn how to get kabro out of the sacks that it comes in, which is a bit difficult. And it has a variety of different, like, difficulty levels by the recipe, so some of them are much more difficult than others. I try to make... Oh, I haven't gotten that part yet. Okay, so they make a really common Japanese dish that's Neapolitan spaghetti, which is sort of a Japanese comfort food, where you essentially make spaghetti noodles like you normally would, and then you add in like a bunch of bell peppers, and usually there's sausage involved, and then you kind of like stir fry it after you do it. So we tried a couple different versions.
With ketchup.
With ketchup.
It's a big point.
Ketchup and Worcestershire sauce. Key ingredient.
It's really good.
But I tried to make the Kitchen Princess one, and it didn't quite turn out. I had to make a lot of adjustments. And I added a lot of extra vegetables. It wasn't, like, the recipe called for only, like, 2 tablespoons of ketchup or whatever, and it needed a lot more ketchup than that. And I think I ended up adding, like, regular commercial spaghetti sauce at some point. To make it healthier, I tried it with whole wheat pasta, and it cut down on the amount of oil in the ingredients. It's always, like, counting calories. I used to I'm a Weight Watchers lifetime member. I lost 60 pounds, and, like, now I'm keeping the weight off for, like, 3 years. So that's always a big concern for me, like, holding me back in some forms of baking and cooking, where it's like, how much oil? How many eggs? God. Okay, next. Oh, so then Sam tried another Neapolitan spaghetti recipe.
Yeah, I just found it on about.com. I pretty much did the same thing, just cut up some peppers. Mine was really just bare bones kind of cooking, but it actually ended up being really good. The ketchup cooked and it was really sweet on the noodles, so if you don't really like sweet foods, don't eat it or just add a bunch of Tabasco sauce. But I fed it to a bunch of my friends and they all thought it was really good. And it's a really simple, kind of easy thing to make, very cheap, just on the go.
Yeah, it doesn't really take that long. I used frozen bell peppers from Trader Joe's to like cut the thyme, but I think the fresh ones would probably taste a lot better. And the grease from the sausage
is
probably...
The grease from the sausage is good. If you throw a bunch of garlic in there and just let that steep for a while, it's pretty good.
Unless you want to Americanize it, you could cut up hot dogs and put them in there. It would be like hot dogs and macaroni and cheese. Okay, you plug the notes. And what's the next one?
Chicken Gloria, another ketchup dish. It sounds gross, but the ketchup, when it cooks off, much like alcohol, is actually really, it brings out a really nice flavor. So this was, this is kind of like the Neapolitan spaghetti stuff, but with rice, and you bake it. So we stir-fried a bunch of chicken and cabbage and vegetables and stuff like that, and we put that all in a pan, and then you make this like white sauce with milk and flour. And then you cook rice, you stir-fry the rice with the vegetables, and you put that all in a baking pan, and you pour the white sauce in it, and then you're supposed to toast it for 10 minutes in your oven. And it took a little bit longer than 10 minutes. We actually had to convection cook it for 20, but it ended up being really tasty and really surprisingly good. So that's definitely something I would try out. Keep in mind, a lot of this stuff sounds kind of gross and weird, but it's actually really, really good.
Yeah, the ingredients combined in a surprising way. I also tried to make the cocoa scones and fruit podger. The cocoa scones were the easiest thing that I made, because it has very few ingredients. You just kind of measure them out, and it's hard to go wrong. Although the recipe that's given in Kitchen Princess says it makes, like, 6 scones or something, and I only made, like, 4.5. Like, so it's a little off in terms of, I mean, I was cutting them really small, like I have a really small cup to like, to use as a cookie cutter, and it was still only like 4 scones. But they were delicious, no, I ate them, what'd you think?
They were great.
I think that the size difference maybe, because American
coins. They said to use a cup, but we had this tiny cup, anyway.
It's an American cup.
It was a Japanese cup. And they have a hot chocolate recipe that, in one time they talk about how to make this one, like, hot lemonade is how they translate it, and that's a weird translation of a Japanese product that is always around in Japan in the winter. It's this, like, vitamin lemon drink that you drink hot. You can get out of vending machines. You can get it at 7-Eleven or whatever in these little packets. I was really glad when I finally found some in the city. It's just filled with, like, vitamin C and stuff. It's a strange kind of idea, but it's kind of like drinking a hot tea when you think you're getting sick or whatever. But they give a recipe for how to make it not from a packet, which Sam tried.
Basically what you do is you just squeeze the juice out of a lemon, put honey with the lemon juice in a cup, and then you just pour hot water into it. My only suggestion for this is the recipe calls for half a lemon, and this is to taste preferences, but I used a whole one, and the flavor was actually a lot stronger. So it's a really refreshing drink, especially in the winter if you're getting a bit of a cold or you just sort of want to relax. It's a really nice drink.
And I also tried to make, so in terms of the sort of diet food, there's fruit agar, which is used in a key story point in Kitchen Princess, where she wants to make a dessert that will make her model friend happy,
And her model friend's like, I can't eat desserts because that's way too many calories, which is certainly an experience I've had. So agar is supposed to not have any calories, and it's made of seaweed or something. It's kind of this gelatinous, it's like a clear jello in the end. It doesn't quite taste like jello. So I looked around to find some agar, and it wasn't that easy to find. That bag was like $17 at Whole Foods, so I passed that up. But $8.50 plus shipping for this other kind of agar was no good, so finally I went to the Japanese specialty store, and they had loads of it. They didn't have the flake kind of agar that Kitchen Princess talked about. They only had these weird blocks. So measuring it out. Yeah, I should go to Chinatown. But then I'd have to know, anybody in New York City, like, you can shop for Japanese ingredients at Chinese or Korean stores, but then it's really useful to know the Chinese and Korean names for them, which Wikipedia is great for. I have searched for many times for, like, long onions, which is like a Japanese thing that looks like a between a leek and a scallion in size. And if you know when you go to Koreatown's grocery store, like, what the Korean name is for it in English, then you can look for it. So I broke apart the flakes and I put them in a cup, and then it called for like a can of fruit, so I found like a Japanese can of fruit, because I didn't think canned fruit in America would quite work with it. And the can of fruit didn't have the calorie count on it, and if it's canned in syrup, that's a lot of calories. So supposedly healthy syrup, probably not that great. Anyway, they say you boil the agar like you would like if you were making jello, where it has to dissolve completely, it really has to dissolve completely, or the end result is a horrible mush. Which I found out on the first attempt. Oh, and I have like a Tetris ice cube tray that I made the fruit agar cubes in instead of a regular ice cube tray. And so then you cut it apart. But mine kind of was mushy and horrible at this point, because you make one batch of the agar with milk and then one batch without milk. And like it just kind of turned into this mush. What do you think of this one, Noah? It's pretty gross.
Slimy. Yeah, kind of slimy. I don't cook, but I do the dishes. And let me tell you, this was like slowly boiling the blob as like bits and pieces sort of sloughed off and sort of slithered away. You only had it once.
No, actually, I made it again when you weren't around, and I made sure to boil the flakes completely, and then it worked out much better. It turned into a more solid, like kind of jello thing. Here, I served it with fresh fruit instead of canned fruit because that was much healthier and better taster. Okay, competitive cooking manga. Iron Wok John is an amazing long series about just Chinese cooking. I mean, John is a Japanese chef, and he's kind of an anti-hero. He's sort of evil, but you're kind of cheering for him to win, like, sort of. But he does really, like, bad things, like gives drugs to the judges at one point, and they're kind of tripping out. And he uses very, like, underhanded, he sometimes uses underhanded methods, but sometimes he's, like, it's just really ridiculous.
When he loses, he gets really sad, and then you feel really bad for him. He just starts, like, crying.
I'm still missing chunks in the middle of the series, so I haven't read the whole thing. Here's the thing where he's making a grotesque panel where he's making something out of chicken blood or pigeon blood. He's draining the pigeons, kind of, and he's licking a knife. He just has, like, this devil-like appearance. Here's another one where they cut open this kind of chicken pie to find out what's inside, and it's like, oh, no, I guess I cut that one out. Sorry, the panel's really small in here, so it's really weird. What happened to the eggs? Oh, maybe I shouldn't have cut that panel out. Anyway, in the end of the book, they're doing, like, food of the future, and there's amazing competition where he makes this, like, fluffy mountain of stuff, and it's food for people in the future who don't have teeth or whatever, and it's great. It's like eating a mist.
Eating a cloud.
Like, the tasting descriptions are really funny. Yes, it's like eating a cloud or a mist. But even if you missed the meat, it should have given it some texture.
That's one of the other highlights of food manga, is the descriptions are ridiculous, and it's awesome.
Oh, a lot of Japanese television, it's worth noting at this point, is about eating and tasting food. Like, Iron Chef in Japanese, like, when you watch in America, it seems like this crazy show. Like, it's so out there that, like, it really caught on here. But in Japan, like, there are tons of cooking shows. Like, we watched this one show when we were there randomly, and it was like, which sushi will the old man order next, kind of. Because there's a way in which, that's what our Japanese friend translated it as, where, like, there's a way that you're supposed to order sushi, like, a certain order, and if you're ordering a la carte.
The way you order it says a lot about your personality.
Right. Don't order the eel first. That's the only thing I remember.
Why is that?
I think that taste of the eel will ruin the other flavors for you afterwards. Something like that. So the eel is very rich.
And it means you're stingy.
So that happens in, like, whiskey tasting, too. You don't taste the super peaty whiskey first because it kills your taste buds for
people eat sea urchins.
Oh. I don't know. I think we have a lot of slides. I'll come back to that. So then I think the next chapter in this, after the cloud dish, it lacks crunch. So, at the end of, between different Iron Wok John chapters, especially at the end of the series, there's, like, these one-page bizarre recipes that are not presented in a normal recipe way. Instead, it's like a dialogue that they're teaching their assistants how to cook something. So they have this weird, like, back and forth. about, and it has a strange kind of story set up, and then they give a recipe at the bottom. And I feel really bad, like, I know DR Master had to, like, replace their translator at one point because it's hard enough to just translate Japanese and English and cooking, that's fine. But this is translating the Japanese names of, like, Chinese dishes. So there's this other kind of layer of translating that's really hard to do. So for some of the recipes in Aaron Wabjana, I appreciate, like, the effort that went into translating these things.
I appreciate the cooking.
We can take a bite out of that. That's crazy. All right. So I tried to make this turnip soup. Unfortunately, I got the turnips, like, way out of season. It calls for, like, dried mushrooms, and the ones that I got were, like, way too small. It called for slab bacon, which I could not find. Like, I tried to order slab bacon on, a bacon cut to a certain thing on, you know, like, Fresh Stretch, and it just did not work out. This was supposed to be the slab bacon. It was still sliced bacon again. And you keep the turnip peels. I peeled turnips that were, like, way too small, carefully skinned some turnips. I tried to, that's obviously not the right width, and it didn't really work out. But this soup was, it's incredibly greasy and filled with all this, like, bacon fat, but it was tasty. I'm sure it was, like, a million points if you're counting calories. But it was also extremely filling. Later I tried again, and I found, like, larger turnips that were more in season. I never got the bacon quite right, but I did notice some of the cream ratio. There's, like, the turnips and turnip green seasons, and I was making this, like, in March. So it was, like, nothing was available. So I modified it a little bit. And I couldn't find turnip greens at all, so I ended up using dandelion greens. But actually, that was tastier when I finally did try it with turnip greens. And the dried chili peppers, and I don't even know what to talk about. All right. So I sliced up the skins, and then you stir-fry them. And that turned out really well. Like, these two recipes were in the same volume. Like, they did the turnip soup recipe and then the turnip greens recipe. The idea being you bought turnips with greens, and now you'll use both, which is not what I did at all. And then I tried another thing, a scallop dish that calls at 1.4 ginger extract. They don't mean ginger extract. I'm pretty sure they mean, like, you know, crushed ginger or something like that. And this just tasted weird. I also got totally the wrong kind of peppers for this. Instead of getting, like, the smaller Japanese, like, peppers or some other kind of American pepper along the thing, I ended up getting these Korean peppers that made it so hot it was difficult to eat. And the kind of scallops they were using, I wasn't really sure, like, if they wanted, like, Atlantic or the big Pacific kind. And bean sprouts, they demand you take the heads and tails off bean sprouts, which is, like, this labor-intensive thing. And there's a one-chapter story in Oishinbo about this, about a boy removing the beans, like, heads and tails, because it's supposed to make this huge taste difference. I think it's a lot of labor, and for the most part, like, only if you're for some special occasion, otherwise it doesn't make that much difference. And, like, you thinly slice the carrots, and mine just was not turning out like the picture. Like, no matter how thin I julienne the carrots, there's just no way this was happening. So it was sort of a failure. I can look at it like the... Okay, so then I made a crab meat thing. I'm going to be entire Iron Walk John. Let's just skip ahead to, like, the next bit. Okay, Iron Chef Italy. There's an Italian umage that's not translated called Bambino. There's also he's trying to be a great, Italian chef. Here's some scenes from Bambino, where he's cut his hand by accident in the kitchen, and then, that's pretty bad cut, he's slapped by a supervisor. How would you be so careless?
But then he'll be...
What?
They all get yelled at. He cuts his hand and they're like, you're a jerk. And then the boss is like, you also.
It's been adapted into a live action drama that stars the guy who was in Honey or Dango. So I watched more episodes of the drama than I did of, like, reading the manga. That guy is super cute. The show is perhaps not that great. So we tried another King Armor moderate curry from Addicted to Curry. So Sam, you did this one.
No, you didn't.
No, you didn't?
No.
Oh, so we just have, like, translated recipe. Oh, that's right. The River Steve's tried this one. I think I just want to talk about this one.
It's just like beef curry. It looks really good.
Oh, the point on this one is to wear rubber gloves. So, it's like fire.
Yes.
And, okay, cooking pot.
All right.
Oh, it's great. So, cooking pot, according to me, is the fifth longest manga in Japan. There's 94 volumes long, there are 151 episodes of anime from 1992 to 1995, and there's an upcoming live-action drama that probably already took place, because this panel was 20 years ago. I have the opening of Cooking Papa, show.
Thank you.
how incredibly intimidating I find this man. He's a provider. He's got this huge square jaw. You know, one of his kids is listening to his pregnant wife's sort of rabid belly, and he's just, man.
But he's got delicate enough hands to, like, cook all this food.
He's the ultimate provider.
Yeah, he's the Uberman.
This is insanely popular.
It's so super popular. It just seems like a happy show about everyday life.
And it's so simplistically drawn, too.
Yeah. Okay. But so for something a little more manly than that, well, not, or less manly, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
There's competitive eating. This won the Excellence Award of 36 Carnivores, shit, whatever, Association Award, Neon Manga. Okay, another award. It's 21 volumes long. You can find it at Kinokuniya here in the city. I think Along the Back Wall is a really long series. I'm going to show just a few panels from the opening where it's lunchtime in the crowded city. This poor seller man only has a few dollars in his pocket. He notices a line of people. What's going on? There's an eating contest going on inside. And he realizes if he can finish a certain number of bowls in less than the time limit, that it will be free. And he's like, oh, good, I can eat lunch for free. It doesn't quite work out. And the person winning the competition eats a lot more than he does. And then he's inspired, trained, they're becoming competitive eaters. In each cover of the series, it's like a different kind of food that he's competitive eating. Okay, there's competitive tasting. Oyster Yoga Gourmet. Japan, it's over 102 volumes long and still going. There are 102 episodes of anime from 1988 to 1992. I've only ever seen like one or two episodes of it fan subbed, but there are a lot of clips from it on Earth's Raw on YouTube if you go looking. There are many made-for-TV movies of it and at least one theatrical film from the 70s, and I would really love to see all those probably really bad. So what is Ocean Boy about? Ocean Boy is about a food critic for a newspaper that's writing their 75th anniversary edition of the newspaper. They're writing something called The Ultimate Menu, which is, I still am not sure what that entails, but it means that he goes around with his coworkers and tries super delicious foods from every kind of category and every sort of dish to include on the menu. And they don't really say if they make it on the menu or not. But it's an ongoing thing because it became so popular that, like, it was only going to be so many volumes, but then it was so incredibly popular that the author kind of drops that premise and it's just sort of like it's going on forever. They're just always looking for the ultimate menu. Here's a few scenes from a Japanese one that isn't in the translated in the American one where they're eating a really great looking strawberry pie, strawberry curd. So a lot of Oshibo, of course, like any shonen hero, his father is the greatest food critic in all of Japan. And so he's estranged from his father, who often shows up and like defeats him horribly. Like, no matter what the competition is, his father always wins. Just comes in and he's like, you don't know, you never know. And he's like, I tried so hard. Like, he hates his father because his father, like, kind of made his mother, like, cook herself to death, in a way.
Yeah, not literally.
Not literally.
She's there.
But he just kept being like, this is horrible dinner, and kept sending it back and sending it back, and so she was dried from the strain and the stress of cooking for this man, and he's like, oh. So the father's kind of a villain, and he's sort of cheering for Oshino and his sidekick.
But he's also a jerk.
Yeah, he's a jerk.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's not a jerk.
Most food critics are jerks.
That's true. So here they're tasting some gyoza, and I like the descriptions here. It's like, I love the texture of the skin. It just slides right into your mouth. It's grosser in like an old man. It feels as if the skin is caressing my tongue and lips. That's why I read Oshimo for great tasting things. So then by steaming it, you get an extremely sensual texture. Very careful. So here are different kinds of volumes of Oishinbo, which are sort of grouped by cuisine. The first volume was about Japanese cuisine, and then there's one about sake, which is really like, they're really down on themselves in the sake volume about Japan and like national identity and what it means to drink sake. It's a really patriotic volume.
Yeah, that's a big thing throughout Oishinbo.
And that's true about
that everything makes them feel Japanese and why they're so proud to be in this country.
Yeah.
Especially in the rice one with the too.
There's the ramen and gyoza one, is a really good one. That's where I took the gyoza slides from. The fish and sashimi one, there's a vegetable line that has very different. I put down the Oishibo a la carte was kind of a reprint of the series in Japan. Like, it was arranged sort of like this series. They had really different covers. So I'm going to note sort of the difference. But I think that they just picked these covers so they could tell, like, so they could sell it to non-manga readers. Like, this, you know, this is going to be a comic, but it's about food, or they're giving you what's inside. I think it's sort of like the vertical covers. Which this almost seems like something Vertical would print. Oh, so at the end of the panel, if you stick around, we have a bunch of cookbooks from Vertical that they've given for the panel, so you can learn about Japanese cooking, the Irish up Chinese cookbook, and so we have a few of those. So the Joy of Rice one is also another very patriotic volume of Oishinbo, because rice is so ingrained in Japanese culture, and they talk a lot about the different kinds of rice and Japanese rice. There's a big story arc with some American consulate that comes in and wants to sell them rice from California and like the government politics behind it and all this stuff.
Yeah.
But it really makes you want to eat onigiri if I'm in the
middle.
They do. We try to.
Oh, yeah.
Izakaya pub food is a little bit difficult because, like, there are a lot of izakayas in New York City, but if you live outside of New York, it's a stranger dining experience. It's like tapas, but Japanese food that you eat while drinking beer. So the vegetables volume, which we try to recipe from, that's a really good one. There's a lot of stuff in it about organic farming that kind of, it gets a little preachy at times, but not too preachy. We wanted to find something out. So in this volume of Wajinbo, they are not satisfied with cabbages or something. They're on some cabbage mission, and they go to the countryside with the father, and they're trying cabbages straight out of the earth. They bite into the core, and the organic cabbages, they're like, wow, it's amazing, it's like fruit, it's sweet. And so we were like, okay, I'll try this. I went to Whole Foods and bought an organic cabbage, and no, it bit into the core.
It did not caress my lips
We did not get a lot of information. We did this panel at Anime Boston, and someone suggested in the audience that the timing of the difference between what we did and what the people in the book did was they picked a cabbage directly from the farm and cut it up right there and ate it. Because
yeah.
The sugar in vegetables changes, like, the longer if you ship them or if it's a different time of day. Like, my grandparents run a sweet corn farm. And the farm, what you do is you pick the corn and eat it the same day, but you have to pick the corn before noon when everything heats up. So I don't like eating corn in the city because I know it's like, it's already been over one night and it's not like super fresh. Even in the farmer's market, they might have picked it like the day before just because it just takes some shipping there. So I tried, and this is the most successful thing I've cooked for Mami so far. I'm not a big fan of asparagus, but their advice on this like asparagus cooking is excellent. And this is from the vegetables farm. Have some closer up things. They made a kind of walnut paste out of daishi, and I'm too lazy to make my own daishi broth, but that's a key thing in Japanese cuisine. They always are talking about like how to make daishi and blah blah, and I'm probably pronouncing it wrong, but you can just get dashi. Okay, dashi. I knew it. Okay, so dashi, you don't have to make it with like kombu and bonito flakes, and like it's a really complicated process, and there's straining involved and boiling water. It may be no big deal for a Japanese housewife. I don't have that kind of time. I like about the instant kind. It's the same equivalent you buy like chicken bouillon, like dashi instant. It's kind of that similar thing. I don't know how much to use because I don't know if it's the equivalent, but I just kind of guess. And I knew I did it wrong. It's too salty. So the Wajinbo volume like suggests like straining the, only boiling the asparagus, well, cutting off the pointy bits of the asparagus, like the things on the side, and then like boiling it only for a little while. Then you have to, instead of rinsing it or anything, you fan it to dry it off. And I happen to have a fan that I got for free from some other event. And, like, I felt kind of like an idiot, like, pampering, like, asparagus. Like, I'm going to, like, feed it grapes next, like, one at a time. but it worked amazingly well. Like, I really dislike boiled asparagus, but this fanning it off to cool it is, like, if you run cold water over it, it just takes the flavor right out. So this was, like, totally amazing. And you don't have to cut the fins off the side. Like, I tried this, I did this many times after this. Like, this is now the main way I will cook fresh asparagus, because it was so effective. But you don't really have to shave the things off. That's just, like, extra work. The walnut paste, maybe it would have been better if I did know what I was doing with dashi, but it was okay. It was kind of weird tasting. And, like, the recipe in the book makes a lot of servings if you use all of the stuff they say. At least four, but we ended up eating a lot of it for dinner, like, the same night. I think the paste kind of kept in the fridge for a day, but not very long. It's the kind that you want to make fresh, which is a big key part in Japanese cuisine. I also tried to make, like, another recipe from Oishinbo is just the very simple sea bream pine skin style, and there's sea bream kamishio style. And I couldn't do the pine skin thing, because I eventually found a kind of sea bream at a Japanese grocery store. I think they're always seasonal, maybe for, like celebrations and stuff, but I finally found some, and I tried to cut it up in such a way like the way they do it in the book, I should have included the panels for their doing it in the story. You don't salt it directly because that would ruin the meat. Instead, you like get paper and you wet the paper with a spray bottle that's filled with like salted water, and then you put salt like under the sheets of it and make a little envelope. I felt very Iron Chef making a paper envelope or something. And then you wrap it in saran wrap and put it in the fridge. And then you have to cut it in a certain way. And the book doesn't really tell you that well how to cut sashimi. So I had to look on, and this is great, it's like the saving grace of cooking at all, is YouTube. I didn't know how to cut sashimi, so I'm like, how do I cut sashimi on YouTube? And like a bunch of videos showed up. So I watched a bunch of videos about like how to cut it against the grain. And I talked to a lot of like guys my own age who normally wouldn't be the sort of guys who cook, and they are also like, yes, the internet is taught me how to cook. It's like, internet, how do I cook corn in the oven? Like, how long? Like, the internet is filled with wonderful like answers to these, but I like to compare a lot of sources.
Yeah,
just but the internet, but there's a really good internet cooking show that's Cooking with Dog, and say a Japanese cooking show that has English. And the dog just kind of sits there.
Yeah,
and
the dog kind of creeps me
out. So this was okay, but I think it would have been better if I eaten this fish a little fresher. I don't know, it was weird. And it was like a lot of sashimi for a few people. What did you think of it, huh?
It was okay. It still tasted fishy.
Yeah, I think I did something.
That's a real problem, I think, with that recipe.
I think I did it wrong. Like, I got it the day before or something. And should have been sitting
there. Maybe.
Is there staff? Can we get more water? The person in the back.
We're very thirsty.
Can we get another pitcher of water, please? Okay. So, Sam, you tried a recipe from the Joy of Rice Vine.
Yeah, there's a recipe in the front that is scallop rice, which is a really interesting and creative and fun recipe to do. This was probably the most fun recipe I had, and the result was a little bit mediocre. What they called for you to do is to get fresh scallops and wash them off in salt water and then create a mixture of soy sauce, sake, and I guess, yeah, it was just soy sauce and sake, actually. And you're supposed to boil the scallops in the soy sauce and sake, and then after they're fully cooked, you separate them and take the broth, and then you, instead of using water to boil the rice, you use the broth to boil the rice, which is really interesting and brings out the flavor of the scallops really well in the dish. This dish just made me realize that I don't really care for scallops. So, but it was really interesting. It's easy and fun to make, and if you really like that kind of flavor, then this is something that would be great just to show to people and do.
I asked the editorial manager at Viz like a little bit about the translation of the Oishinbo recipes, and she did make all of the recipes from the Oishinbo bombs, but she felt obliged to test them in order to test the adaptations for the US editions. She's like, it's a set recipe made clearly for the sake of our readers. It made me clear in no way that I was driven by my addiction to Japanese cuisine, nor was I using the excuse of work in order to satisfy my gluttonous cravings at all. Sadly, my professionalism does not extend to photographing the evidence, which quickly disappeared. So she talks about two common issues editors face when adapting foreign recipes are the ingredients and techniques. Fortunately, staple Japanese items like tofu and soy sauce are easy to come by now, but lesser known ingredients like sancho and chuka soba are not available outside specialty stores and urban centers. So for the latter, I had to provide possible substitutions with items that might be easily found. The second, and frankly tougher, is use technique, or more exactly, the assumed knowledge of the level of the readers. The recipes in the Japanese editions of Oishinbo quite naturally assume that the readers would possess a certain level of familiarity with the basics of Japanese cooking skills. When she got the div, now this cuts off, like something when I change this file to the font. Anyway, she says how she doesn't assume that the American readers know how to cut sashimi, which is true, and tries to give a couple pointers in the notes that weren't in the Japanese edition, so we would know how to do it. And the hardest part about editing Oishinbo, though, was reading it. And from what she's been told, it also makes you really hungry. Luckily, she has some miso soup and stove right now. Anyway, here's a panel from a non-translated volume of Oishinbo where he kind of goes on a rampage, stringing the adult turkey. It destroys the editing office. Which one? And here's whether it's like non-translatable. There's something with the U.S. and like a tank, and I don't even know.
Sure.
Okay, here's one that we're just gonna. We've only got like 5 minutes left, I think. Let's go until 2:30.
2:45.
Oh. Okay. Yeah. Then we've got. I don't have to super rush. This one is about. This is a ramen manga, just about ramen eating. The guy in the story goes to real ramen restaurants and kind of reviews them, so it's sort of a food review manga, but there's also a narrative going on where it's about a truck driver who actually like hits a guy, and he like feels really bad, and he can't like pay him off or make it up to him, and so he's like, I'll tell you what I can do to make it up to you, your injury. I'll take you to the best ramen restaurants in Japan. So they go from one ramen restaurant to the next, and then the guy he hit ends up just kind of turning into like his whatever like truck drivers have, like a sidekick, like, you know, someone who goes with him.
What's it called?
I don't know, you can read the ramen simpanji, you know.
Ramen
anyone else?
Trucker.
It's a temple.
Truck ramen.
That's a temple.
like Tampopo, yeah. Oh, Tampopo is a great movie about ramen. If you can find it on DVD in America, which I highly recommend. Here's a chart of ramen. I think I have the whole incident. He doesn't see the guy, and then there's just a lot of great shots of ramen. And they list like the recipes and stuff. They're so excited about ramen. And they're getting a great tasting scene. Oh my god! Hola! Is what he's saying there. And the crime again, crime where he starts to hear status. Buddha and stuff. It's a spiritual moment. So then they give you the real address and how to find it, and the phone number of the place and the hours that it's open in Japan. So there's also a manga about wine. Yay. Wine specialty manga La Sommelier by the same author as Sommelier, like the not the male version of Sommelier, and Bartender. Bartender's 13 episode anime series, which I sadly have not included. I could do a panel just about alcohol ones, which is pretty good. So she's a wine sommelier, and I don't really know that much about it, but I think Tokyopop was looking at it once. I don't think they'll publish it now, though. It's a kind of, but more importantly, Drops of God. Drops of God is about a guy who, he is the son of a really famous wine critic in Japan, and he doesn't even want to drink wine. Like, he's so sick of his father's business that he works for a beer company as like a screw you dad kind of not even thing. Then his dad, unfortunately, gets cancer and dies at the beginning of the story, and his dad leaves in his will. But a few months before his dad dies, he adopts this other dude who's like an actual wine critic as his son, and like as a second son. And the beer guy is like, they're set on a competition where they either one of them can inherit their dad's like $2 million like wine cellar library thing, like his wine collection. Sorry, but they have to like taste a series of wine and guess what wine it is by tasting it. No, wait, it's not by tasting it, by his descriptions.
Yes.
His father in his will left a series of descriptions of 13 types of wine, and based on his like tasting notes, they have to go and find what wine it is and then present it to the lawyer of the estate and present their guesses.
Do you have any of the actual kids notes in there?
No.
Okay, because they're all extraordinarily metaphorical. It's like, I'm dreaming of an island connected to the shore by a bridge. On the island is a small lean-to. I remember my childhood.
It's a little more specific. The childhood one's a different one. But this is from the first chapter where there's a confused waitress who, she's screwed it up. She's got an important customer, and the wine doesn't taste right. You order this really expensive wine to show off to a client, and she's like, what's gone wrong? And he happens to be dining nearby. He's like, I'll help you out. I know what's wrong. Give me the bottle of wine. And he, like, decants it in a super fancy way. And then she tastes it, and it tastes totally different. Like, the exclamation point. What does it taste like? A field of flowers. Suddenly transported here.
Bottle shock.
It's true. So this manga also has tears. He's crying while drinking in this case. But what it's known for is like...
He's had too much.
This one finally, he understood what his father meant at some point. Anyway, there are really great descriptions of the wine in this one. Like, he drinks a wine that's like being at a Queen concert. Freddie Mercury's vocals, like, laughing above the baseline. So this manga was incredibly successful in Japan. It was made into a live-action drama series that came out in 2009, Kami no Shizuku. Now, the lead actor, yeah, he's cute, but he can't really act. I get the feeling he's a model, and he's just not a great actor. The other, the supporting cast tends to be a bit better, but it's pretty funny. I especially recommend that the first episode is hilarious and awesome. It's also kind of from a beginner's point of view, because it's sort of like if you didn't know anything about drinking wine, the series is very educational. Like, the first episode tells you about vintage, and the second episode tells you about, like, pairings and that sort of thing.
Terroir,
like, they define terroir for you, and tell you a lot about how wine is made. It's so successful that, in fact, first I'll show another scene from the drama. It has an actor in it who was in the Nodame Kantabile live-action drama, who is great. He's got huge dreadlocks and plays a homeless person who buries wine, like, in these crates in the woods. It's really excellent. The series was so amazingly successful that it got exported to Korea and China, and then, like, because of this one manga series, wine became more popular in Korea, which apparently Korea has this importing thing where until 1981 they couldn't import foreign liquors at all. So there's not a big history of wine drinking in Korea. But because of this manga, a lot of people were like, oh, now I feel like I know more about it, I can taste more of it. Wine sales skyrocketed. It got to the point where
because they always write, like, the people who wrote this series and other people who drew it are, like, this pair of wine collectors and wine connoisseurs. Eventually, like, some of the French winemakers, it was translated into French, too, because obviously it has to be in France, like, it's about wine. So, but the French maker, like, this was really recent, like, from a few weeks ago, a French winemaker withdrew a vintage after the manga popularized one of the bottles in the series, because he felt like speculators would invest it and, like, no one would be able to taste it, so now he's just not selling it at all. We immediately withdrew this vintage from our sale through our agents across the world in order to avoid speculation, because we wanted this wine, which had been chosen as a mythical wine, to remain within reach of everyone. Which I think is kind of contradictory, like now it's not really within reach of anyone.
Yeah.
Except for, like, people they know, I guess. Whatever. Anyway.
Is this the one that was profiled in the New York Times?
Yeah, it was in the New York Times, and it was in a couple other things where it was popularizing certain types of wine. Like, as soon as the new volume of this manga would hit the shelves, wine sellers would, like, suddenly have crazy demands for the exact, you know, vintage and house that they're recommending. An English version apparently is coming soon. I've heard that someone is picking it up for America. I can't wait to read it, because the live action drama was a little bit bad in it. But what do you eat while enjoying a fine wine manga? This photograph is of manga critic Jason Thompson at a manga tasting party that he held, where his friends were, like, you know, tasting the manga and smelling it and doing crazy things. Here he's grading some, and that's my hint for what do you read next after wine manga. Manga about cheese. This one is called A Time for Cheese. It's just about cheese. The different volumes about different kinds of cheese. It's kind of like educational. And actually, it makes more sense now that I've spent more time in Japan, because the Japanese don't eat a lot of dairy. The dairy section is always incredibly small, so cheese is kind of a weird subject for them. And it can be very expensive and not very easy to come by. Like, there are a lot of specialty shops in Tokyo with, like, in the basement of department stores where fancy stuff are, but, like, cheese prices are incredibly high.
I also wanted to say that a lot of the older folks, older Asian folks, they don't have cheese, but they don't have the enzymes.
Yeah, they don't. Although there's a lot of lactose intolerance, too, so it's just not, like, the kind of same milk and cheese consumption. So, Time for Cheese runs in this magazine. Chatha is a bit weird. In the Weekly Times. And here they're enjoying Parmesan. I love that page. And there's also an Oishinbo volume 73, is just about different kinds of cheese, where they talk about how it's made and different kinds of cheese. And they're written that. But it's different from Cheese Magazine, I should put it. Just to show Johnny.
About another kind of cheese.
Here's my aside about Bartender, which is sort of out of place.
Yay.
Bartender was adapted into a 13-episode anime series. I'm seriously considering that I'll get this. My Japanese level is not great, but fortunately a lot of the names of alcohol are spelled out in katakana, so I can guess what they're talking about most of the time. It's a really, like, slow-paced series. It's not available legally, but you can, you know, find it the usual sort of means. But each episode is about a different drink. Like, there's one episode just about a margarita, and they make it sound really classy, which is really weird. They give, like, a history of the drink, and the bar that they drink at is, like, it has a huge oak door, there's almost no customers ever, like, there's no screens or anything, and, like, it's kind of a mythical bartender who knows, without you asking, what drink you need at that moment.
Based on your emotional situation and family history.
They have a problem, a deep problem in their life,
and he knows.
And he fixes them a drink and solves it.
It's actually very educational.
It's an awesome series, but that is the plot of every episode.
And it's like one-off stories. It's
very bad. Is the wine, the girl who knows about the wine and the bartender, are they related at all in the series?
The sommelier?
Yeah.
Only in the
it's the same author. So, yeah, I don't know, maybe.
It's the same author, so I don't know if it's a family
of
really smart people who are all training to
do. What if that's Carl, the ogre name, I don't even know, because he was reading Muscle Man. Alright, there's other manga about bars and drinking. This is Lemon Heart, which Ed Chavez recommends, and I haven't read it because I don't know much about it. Sometimes he's on his panel and he can tell me. Here's the end of Jason Thompson's party where people are throwing up. Obviously fake. This is a manga just about Pâtissier, like a pastry shop. This was almost licensed by Central Park Media, is my understanding, but I could be off on that. Where it's just about a woman who goes to work at a pastry shop, just kind of everyday pastry shop kind of life.
So a similar title is four volume manga by Kimi Yoshinaga, which is really excellent, which is mostly about baking, and maybe there's some yaoi involved, but not very much.
Sensitive boys.
Yeah, but there's also really a drama series. It's really like a cross-genre sort of story that like almost anyone can enjoy. No, I didn't really like it though.
Yeah.
But it's a crowd pleaser usually. Here's the rolled Christmas cakes that they have in one episode, the Bûche de Noël. And it's about being really excited about eating and tasting. So it looks so good. And it's like an arrow straight to the heart. I like the blushing and sparkling like about food. It's like a love reaction from Shoujo Manga. And then just like eating it, they're just not quite crying. Almost.
You're there,
girl. Yeah, alright, super good. You guys have the tears there. And you know, after the dessert, then clearly there's manga just about coffee. This one is Cafe Dream. I don't have the cover there anymore. But this guy is like obviously a huge coffee expert. He has like the percolator thing and a bunch of stuff. This woman has a crazy reaction during the coffee, where she just sort of like passes out for a minute on the couch. I have no idea. Okay. A friend of mine tried to make a croquembouche. Oh no, I'm pronouncing French or Japanese. From Antique Bakery, she was inspired by the recipes. Oh, and these slides are horribly out of order, sorry. Antique Bakery was adapted to a live action film in Korea. So, and the guy begins a French actor, and he's a great reason to see this movie. Everyone in it is really attractive. It's a slapstick comedy. It's kind of all over the place, because at the end, like, it's really, really funny, and then the end is, like, this crazy drama thing that's really serious.
Yeah, the last volume is all about a murder mystery.
Yeah, murder mystery, child kidnapping, and it's like, what? Like, you don't really see that coming.
But it works.
Yeah, it works. Like, it's kind of a jarring film to watch. And then, there is an Antique Bakery anime series that I think was streaming for free on Crunchyroll, maybe. That was just from the opening. But here's the croquembouche that she tried to make. I mean, no, that's not the one she made. That's like what they kind of look like. She said this was really easy to make, but Gina's a really expert baker. Actually, she works at First Second Books. I don't think she's kidding. Yeah. And then Frostbite. So, I think I'm almost the end of this presentation. All right, eat weird stuff. So, Huge Animal Hunter is one of the... like my favorite things that I found that I absolutely can't read, but it looks amazing. It is about like this group of it's a real kind of documentary manga again about people who just go to find and eat the weirdest foods they can find in Japan. I love like weird Japanese food, and this really suits my interest in like a crazy way. On the cover, they have like a variety of the different like crazy foods that they find, like whale miso cutlet burger, banana spaghetti, melon spaghetti. I think you can see the melon spaghetti on the left. Or cucumber Pepsi, an actual Pepsi flavor in Japan. But it was a seasonal flavor, so you can't get it anymore. Like, maybe
anyone who's drunk Celray knows what that'll taste.
I know. Celery Simpson. Here's my dad. Oh, there's like the melon spaghetti on the bottom left, and a nacho parfait on the upper left. For those of you who don't know, nacho is like a cruel joke food. It's like fermenting soybeans that looks like, my friend calls it ogre snot, which is not an accurate description. Like strings kind of dangle from it. But if you eat it like on, Japanese people eat it like on spaghetti with soy sauce, it's actually pretty good that way. Or they'll eat it on toast. And it's really, it's not bad. It's supposed to be something you eat for health, kind of, and you kind of need something else to balance out the flavor. But it's crazy. You would never eat it on ice cream. Like, that's just insane. But we'll get to the panels where they try it later. Here's some other, like, strange kinds of pizza. And
Ichigo not.
Strawberry pasta.
Juice. This one. Okay. Anyway, usually I have someone who can, like, read Japanese. Squid
juice?
Squid ink. Okay. Squid ink juice. Volume 2 has more odd foods than Volume 3. Volume 4 just came out. I don't know if it's over or not. And so in each chapter, they are trying a different weird food, and they go and they drive or whatever and try and find the place that has it. This is from the nacho parfait story. Okay. Surprise. And then they're really horrified by the smell. They're freaked out. But when they finally taste it, oh, there you can see like the nacho strings that I was talking about. Like these gelatinous strings that just go back to the beans. Just covering his mouth. They're holding each other down. Like you have to do it. You can't back out. They're holding each other to this like horrible dare. It forces him to chew, helping him chew. But then it turns out it's pretty good. You're actually at the end of this, they're like, oh, it was all right. And then they tell you where you can find the natto butter. And it's 4 hours in location. Here's another one about train bento, just about train bento, where the characters in it, like, take a, well, the mangaka goes, it's a similar kind of setup where the mangaka goes somewhere with her friends and they're, like, doing something else, but I think there's a guy who's, his thing is to visit every single train station in Japan. He's a train otaku, and so the mangaka goes with him just to eat the food and then, like, write about it. Or I may have just conflated two different series, but I think you get it. So there's a lot of information about, like, the trains and, like, the individual train station. Oh, wait, they adapted that one into an anime series. Like, I only watched one episode, sort of fan stuff, but they had a CG train and the rest of it was really low budget. This is another, like, travel food manga that isn't translated, where they just travel to different parts of Japan and eat whatever the bento is that they serve on that train specifically. So they travel to, like, far-flung places to give you a map. Sorry. I don't have water. Here's a close-up of the bento. Okay, and then came to the end, the really good stuff. Toriko just came out. Volume 2 is out. It is a sort of food manga parody, shonen, super manly thing. Oh, I was going to replace these slides and I didn't. Sorry, that just doesn't make sense. It takes place in a crazy, like, fantasy world. I didn't think this was going to be published in English, so unfortunately I have, like, the whatever piratey slides. But it is in English and I meant to replace these slides for this comic because I own the first 2 volumes already. So, Toriko takes place in a crazy, like, fantasy world where there are, like, fantastical creatures that you couldn't actually eat in real life. And there are certain zones of the Earth in Toriko's world are, like, danger zones that you can't go in or else your life insurance won't cover you anymore because the creatures are so dangerous. So there are different danger levels of animals that he's hunting, but he's hunting for the most gourmet animals available and selling them at the equivalent of the Tokyo Fish Market, which is very famous, but instead it's, like, the crazy monster meat market. So here, Toriko is a super manly dude, and here his bait here is this giant dragonfly. So what is he fishing for in this case? Also, his sidekick is this little dude, who gets smaller as the volume one goes on. This is like a typical lunch on a fishing trip. He knocks off the bottom of the bottle of Maker's Mark, downs the whole thing, follows it with, like, huge lobster tails, and then he's ready to go. Because, okay, now he has bite on the line, so this huge crab fish thing jumps out of the water. His, like, sidekick is really freaked out. And that's the sidekick's entire job is to freak out at every possible moment. Then a giant bird comes and steals the fish. Like, it's this huge eagle thing. And you might think, oh no, now Toriko has lost the fish. That is not the case. He slams the pole into the ground, killing the bird. Although Toriko has a very hunting ethic about not killing things, and oh, sorry.
He won't kill things unless he eats them.
He won't kill things unless he eats them, so we'll just rush through here. So it was elevator wire. That's how it didn't break. Here's someone made a fancy Toriko bento. Okay, the shoujo pigmon mixed vegetables were disappointing. I like the knife panel, but we're out of time. There's some otaku cooking that I found in Japan. And you can get the manga cookbook, it's not very good. Oh, but you guys should come up and get, should we distribute
them? We have a bunch of books. We have some vegetable ones, and appetizer stuff, and Google things.
Cookbooks.
We also have business cards.
Oh, yeah, we're going to do business cards.
Who wants what?
Thanks very much. It's really nice that these manga have apparently really made an impact in the American market. Because the first time we did this panel, nobody recognized any of them.
Oh, and this is like, really quick, this is a Japanese cookbook I highly recommend. The Quick and Easy Japanese Cookbook, I learned a lot from it. It's really great.
Here come the hot young bloods racing the fastest competitive cars in the world in Redline 7000. A symphony of fire and fuel fills the nervous air. Behind every wheel is a man waiting for the signal to go, waiting to break a heart or a record at 170 miles an hour. These are the men who race to live, who live for the thrill of speed and the reckless moment that is reached at Redline 7000. Howard Hawks presents Redline 7000, the story of the wild, turbulent world of racing, starring James Caine, Laura Devon, Gail Heyer, Charlene Holt, John Robert Crawford, Mariana Hill, James Ward, and Norman Alden. See Redline 7000, a Paramount Pictures re-release in Panavision and Technicolor.